We'll now move on to Randy McCleary, who will tell us a little bit about how to achieve resilience in our support systems. Randy is Vice President and General Manager of the Power Business at Liebert Corporation. Hello, Randy.
Hi, Tom.
Randy, what can today's participants do to increase their availability and preparedness?
Well, Tom, John has done an excellent job of framing the issue of business continuity and introducing the concept of resiliency and why it is such a desirable objective. What I want to do now is drill down a bit and talk about some of the support system strategies that are being deployed today to achieve continuity and resiliency. I'm going to start by talking about the shift that is occurring as organizations move from a focus on recovery to resiliency, and then talk about some of the best practices that are being adopted in the areas of power, cooling, and monitoring to increase resilience. Finally, we'll talk about how to prioritize actions moving forward. In the 80s and 90s, businesses were focused on, what do I do if disaster strikes? Now, data center and business continuity managers are focused on preventing disaster from crippling their organizations. These IT and data center manager and business continuity manager roles are coming together because upper management is saying resilience to us is about being able to take advantage of opportunities. IBM defines resilience as being able to put people any place in the world and have them be fully productive. For Emerson Network Power, we want to be able to engineer and manufacture any product anywhere in the world. Resilience is ultimately about being able to take advantage of new opportunities, whether that means having an infrastructure that allows you to adopt new technologies or to stay running through a storm that takes other competitors down. Now let's look at some of the threats to infrastructure availability. And when you start to list them out, it looks pretty intimidating. Some of these are fairly obvious, such as natural disasters like Katrina, and some not so obvious, like the impact of external agencies, like Sarbanes-Oxley rules that we're all overburdened with today, and of new technologies and applications like virtualization software. But with the exception of inadequate service level agreements and external agencies and organizations, there are infrastructure, design strategies, and technologies you can use to minimize your vulnerability to these threats. It seems obvious that the business is dependent on its information technology, and that technology is dependent upon the power and cooling infrastructure. Are we really willing to invest in the infrastructure to the level that is needed to support the business? A big question. The typical cost of that infrastructure is only 3-5% of the computer and real estate investment. Yet without it, you have no business. How important is it? Extremely important to do it right. Not the place to pinch pennies. At the end of last year, Emerson Network Power sponsored a survey of readers of Continuity Insight magazine, and these are some of the results of that survey. 76% of the business continuity professionals surveyed do not perform what we would consider to be a real test of their generator systems. That means exercising the system at least once per month. Some do it once per week. 68% don't know how long their computers can operate without cooling. I'll show you some interesting data on how increasing densities affect those times in a minute. 44% said cooling systems are not redundant. This is going to become a large problem down the road with high-density racks. 30% don't have monitoring. How can you plan if you don't know what your problems are today? Now I want to home in on some critical power systems. We define four tiers of power systems based on the UPS and power distribution architecture. Each is capable of supporting different levels of availability. At the low end is a system with surge and voltage regulation only, but no UPS, which at best will give you the same availability as the utility. Not very good. Add a single module UPS in Tier 2, and you can expect to achieve 99.99% availability. At least we're moving in the right direction. A Tier 3 system allows redundancy at the UPS level, but delivers power to critical equipment over a single bus or single electrical distribution system, though there are single points of failure downstream from the UPS. Finally, a Tier 4 system is capable of delivering continuous power availability by eliminating single points of failure from the UPS to the dual-coded critical loads. Let's look at the major cooling issues. Most server manufacturers say about 104 degrees Fahrenheit is the maximum heat their equipment can stand. After that, shutdown is not your only problem. You're also looking at component degradation. If you lose cooling in a facility where average rack is about 5 kilowatts, you got about 25 minutes to address the problem. You can see this on the right-hand portion of the graph. If your average kilowatts per rack is about 14 kilowatts, which we're seeing in some installations today, you've got about 2 minutes. Obviously, this is an issue that needs to be addressed in your business continuity planning if you plan on staying up for more than 2 minutes after cooling loss. Even if you aren't in a high heat density environment, an interruption in cooling can cause a failure. When one major New York area wireless service provider experienced system failure after the blackout of 2003, it was ultimately a cooling issue that brought them down. Though the power system, including batteries and generators, was designed for high availability, the cooling was not attached to a backup power supply like a generator. So when utility power went out, so did cooling. So in just 4 hours, the equipment overheated and failed. On the power side, they actually had enough generator runtime to ride through for 8 hours, so the cooling issues cut their planned ride through in half. Hard to believe that you would not put cooling on the generators too. As densities increase, these organizations will experience these types of outages if they don't take that preventive measures. Monitoring is another area that's increasing in importance, particularly as more businesses lose their tolerance to any downtime and strive for continuous availability. Of course, we recommend that all support systems be actively monitored, but one area where there's especially important is batteries. In this pie chart above, the number one and two reasons for equipment downtime is end of battery discharge and bad batteries. End of discharge is when you have an outage and you do nothing. UPS go on battery and continue to run until you run out of energy in your battery. That is referred to as end of discharge. This can be prevented by proper alarming and management processes or by using technology where we have automatic shutdown software which monitors the time remaining on the batteries and sends signals to the computer. Based on the time required to safely shut down your system, the software will notify the computer when it's time to shut down. Bad batteries was the second leading cause of drop loads, and that is a problem that can be addressed through battery monitoring. We'll look at this again later in the presentation. We've explored some of the high-level best practices today, but there's a lot more to consider. We talked previously about the tiers of power protection, and it's no surprise that one of the most significant actions an organization can take is to move from Tier 2 to Tier 3. Or from Tier 3 to Tier 4. There are even things you can do when designing and implementing a power protection system to facilitate a smooth transition up to a higher tier. John talked about adaptive systems. This is important in this area where you need power and cooling systems that can be adapted to your growing need for higher availability without throwing out the whole system and starting over. It is common for companies to start with a Tier 2 system, which you recall as a single UPS, and then as their business needs change, work toward eliminating single points of failure, moving up to a Tier 3 or Tier 4 system, or higher level system availability. To move from one tier to another, you need to eliminate single points of failure between the incoming power and your data center. Redundancy can be used to eliminate or minimize critical points of failure. It also enables zero-impact maintenance and provides the flexibility to add capacity and connectivity without disruption. To eliminate single points of failure, start at the UPS and follow your path downstream. This slide illustrates four common points of failure in the power distribution network. We have a single UPS, a single electrical distribution panel or a series of panels and switchgear, a single cable per computer device, and a single power supply per server. You can remove a point of failure by using dual power supplies for each server. According to Aztec, a sister company in Network Power Systems, a leading manufacturer of power supplies for computers, about 80% of servers today are using dual-corded or dual-power supplies, so this has become the standard. However, with the desire for dedicated electrical circuits per power device, this tends to increase cabling under the floor. Clearly, this will affect airflow and maintainability. Using dual power supplies with managed power strips eliminates the excess cabling and improves underfloor airflow. Managed power strips is the fastest growing trend in the industry today for improving electrical distribution reliability. As we move on, adding a redundant electrical distribution panel with managed power strips opens up a second pathway for electrical distribution. Managed power strips provide load monitoring and control to the receptacle level for easy centralized management of rack mount equipment. This drawing shows a vertical 0U configuration, but rack models are also available. For ease of cable management, you can also run electrical circuits overhead rather than under the floor. Also, managed power strips provide a means by which facilities and IT personnel can work together to solve the rapidly changing environment within the data center while not disrupting current loads. IT gets flexibility and facility gets to maintain control of the electrical distribution. Finally, adding a redundant UPS upgrades this to a dual bus redundant system suitable for Tier 4 applications. Modern data centers even have redundant UPS systems on each bus, so even during periods when one electrical bus may be down for maintenance, the other bus still has redundant operation. More and more, new mega centers are segmenting the floor into zones which are independent for each other for power and cooling. This trend will increase, provides better protection by the partitioning for growth in the future without affecting current systems. You will see this as the standard. First, if you don't have one, you've got to get a generator if you're serious about resilience. Especially in high-density rooms, your cooling should be tied to your generator. This is a minimum, and a generator can also provide a small sense of security. By that, I mean, what if your generator's not backing up your cooling while you're waiting for it to start up? That's why it's important that you know how long you can go without cooling before your equipment begins to shut down. We saw earlier that 14 kW per rack rooms only have about 2 minutes to start thinking about how you're going to buy yourself some time till your generator kicks on. Once the generator kicks on, you will stage your crack units to come on one at a time, all the while the room continues to warm up. One way to buy time is for you to use fans in your racks and tie them to your UPS. These don't provide cooling, they just move air, so they aren't a day-to-day solution, but they can buy you a few minutes while waiting for the generator to start. Earlier, I showed you a survey where 44% of the companies responded did not have redundancy in their cooling system. It's going to represent more of a vulnerability at higher densities, and the irony is that higher densities may actually be the cause of lack of redundancy. We see more and more facilities these days that were designed with redundancy in the cooling system, but as capacities in the room have increased, they have lost the redundancy. But you can achieve an added measure redundancy by using complementary extreme density cooling technologies. Traditional room air conditioners provide base level cooling, while overhead supplemental units provide focused cooling for racks or zones. Because both are open systems, each can use the air in the room to dissipate heat in the event of a failure of a single system. Based on our previous discussion, however, this still has some limitations, so do not forget the generator. Now let's touch on monitoring. As I mentioned previously, it is highly important to monitor the entire support system and know that monitoring is being taken to a new level. In many cases, it is no longer enough to monitor on the room level. it is equally important to know what is going on at the rack level. We're seeing huge demand for managed power strips that mount inside the rack and provide visibility and control of power down to the individual outlet. These strips can control the power to individual receptacles on the strip, monitor the power be consumed by the strip, and have application software which can help you manage all of this. This will help you with determining your hot racks from your cold ones. It can help you balance your electrical loads throughout your facility and allow for redundant distribution within the rack. The other major shift we're seeing in terms of monitoring is a shift from reactive monitoring, collecting and responding to alarms, to proactive monitoring focused on preventing failure. Finally, if your monitoring system is collecting the appropriate information and delivering it to the correct people who are trained in what to do with that information, you can adapt to what's happening with your systems and prevent problems before they happen, which is where the value of the system is realized. Predictive-based monitoring has made advances in many areas and is much better to deploy than the break-fix model for pieces of your critical infrastructure. And of course, don't forget the batteries. That's the most important part of the UPS. Of all the types of monitoring systems, battery monitoring is the most predictive today. The chart on the right indicates that a battery is defective and will lead to a system failure soon unless you do something to prevent it. It says you will need to change your battery soon or your system will fail. This indicates an open cell in the battery string. If this battery was called upon to deliver power, it would not work because the open cell would prevent any energy from flowing through it. Guaranteed, absolutely, downtime. We've explored some of the high-level best practices today, but there's a lot more to consider. Let's look at the next step in taking action to improve your resilience is understanding your downtime costs. These industries, brokerages, credit card companies, home shopping networks obviously have a high cost of downtime. This is how bad it can be. While your costs might not be in this ballpark, they might be high in relationship to your company's overall revenue stream, and that's something you need to find out. If you don't know your downtime costs, or if it's been a while since the figure's been updated, here's a worksheet you can use for a quick calculation to help give you some idea. You've also received a link to this file. Check your reminder email from today or your thanks email after a webcast to download it. Once you understand your download costs, you can start to determine what level of availability and resilience you need and what steps you can take to get there. These are just some of the questions you should ask yourself as you begin to prioritize steps to improve your resilience. As you can see, assessing your infrastructure is a complex undertaking, and it's important to understand the details of the system you are assessing. To get you started, at the end of this webcast, after the survey, you'll be taken to a page where you will find an availability quick test to get you started. We also offer the Liebert Availability Assessment, which is a day-long, on-site look at your systems that leaves you with a report detailing your threats and vulnerabilities. So, what are some of the keys I would like you to think about? Eliminate single points of failure. Plan for cooling redundancy. Implement a monitoring system that is more predictive in nature and not just collect data. Know your downtime costs. Have an availability assessment done on your facility. This can be a complex subject, and one size or solution does not fit everyone's needs. I hope in this short period of time I've given you some issues for you to think about and a path to some tools that will help you in making the right decisions for your future. Thank you for your time.